Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit Podcast. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin, and today I have Dennis Pang with me here. And Dennis is the owner of Popcorn, which is a digital marketing agency located in Vancouver, Canada. So today we are going to be discussing Dennis's journey of building Popcorn, some challenges that he's had to overcome along the way, and how he continues to grow his agency. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dennis.
Thanks for having me, Julia.
So I always ask my guests to get started, you know, what really motivates or inspires you as an agency owner?
What really motivates me as an agency owner is just helping other businesses succeed. And in the process of doing so, also building up people within my team seeing them kind of fulfill themselves and their careers, right? So happy clients and happy employees, that's what really I'm looking for. And that's what keeps me going.
I love that. And how did you get into digital marketing?
So I've always been, I guess, I'll rewind it back into kind of my university days when I was just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Back then, the internet was still pretty new, as in like, we're talking about kind of like late 90s, early 2000s. And so, you know, I remember sort of being just very kind of uninspired by everything I was studying in university, you know, studying like sciences, and I just wasn't really into it. But when the day that we got the internet at home, you know, that was kind of an aha moment for me. And it just seemed like a whole new realm of possibilities just unfolded in front of my eyes, right? So on top of just spending countless hours and days and nights just up on the internet, just doing whatever, I started dabbling in web design and just started initially for myself, just building a website for myself, for things that I liked. And that would have been stuff like anime or pop music or things like that, right? Eventually, I learned about a school that was in Vancouver that had a web design program. And okay. So 10-month program, I went through that. And then very soon after that, started freelancing, developing websites for small businesses. And had a few sort of in-house roles as well as like a web designer. I think there was a lot of kind of lack of education around that time for companies that, you know, they were like, oh, you know, we need a website and we probably need to hire a web designer. And so I found myself in a lot of situations where I was hired as a web designer. 6 months later, the website's done. People are walking by my desk wondering what I'm doing. And to be fair, I wasn't really doing much because, you know, the website was kind of one and done. And I was just So I guess that led to me being laid off a few times and just really kind of like as a web designer bouncing around from freelance job to, freelance jobs to like permanent jobs here and there. I never really found a lot of job security there. And that's kind of when I started to question whether or not that this was kind of the appropriate career that I could keep doing sustainably. So the answer to that was kind of no. I guess during that time, you know, we're talking about you know, there was no WordPress. There were no really like easy ways for businesses to get online. So to some degree, there was still a need for web design and development, but it was a space that was kind of quickly evolving around that time. And so I decided to really just I thought about it long and hard, and I realized that you know, really the opportunity out there was to create marketing strategies for businesses to ultimately drive traffic to their website, so that they can gain more visibility online. And, you know, a lot of the businesses that were perhaps established through offline methods and had done business offline for a long time, like the online world was really kind of like a new horizon for them, right? So that part of it was really exciting for me. And so when it came down to like just figuring out tactics and strategies for driving traffic, that's when I really started to, you know, because at this point, there really were no kind of textbooks out there on kind of how to do things. But, you know, I think when Google came, and even before Google, there were a lot of resources online already on, you know, how to do things like email marketing or SEO or, and then as social media started becoming sort of more and more prominent, I guess specifically with Twitter, that's kind of the first social media network that I really started to look at in terms of how to actually use this platform for a business to, you know, grow an audience, grow their community, and build up their awareness, right? So really from kind of taking an interest in social media, that as we know, like social media, then Facebook, Twitter, now it's like Instagram and TikTok. It's always, and who knows what it's going to be like, you know, in 3, 5, 10 years from now, right? So I think just generally being that the whole media landscape is constantly shifting and evolving, that part of it is really interesting to me. And, you know, a lot of the strategies that we work with or work on for clients, you know, might be a certain way for this year, but you know, next year it might be completely different. So I guess that part of it kind of keeps us on our toes to constantly think of not only what's relevant here and now, but what's kind of on the bleeding edge or even on the cutting edge, or what should we be paying attention to. Lately we've been doing a lot with like TikTok, for instance, right? So we've really seen TikTok explode, especially like during the pandemic. And now it's really interesting that, you know, before it used to be kind of a social media platform just for teenagers, and now we see that over half their users are over the age of 30, right? So that happened in a very short time.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And so I know you mentioned that you had, you know, a little bit, you had some issues with job security when you were, you know, kind of bouncing around trying to find your feet in the industry. So I'm guessing that's what led you to, you know, start your agency, start Popcorn. So tell us a little bit more about, you know, what that deciding factor was to start Popcorn and what it was like in those early days.
For sure. Yeah. So, I mean, as I started to dabble more in social media personally, I started to really become like an influencer, right? Like I started to grow my audience. And, you know, on Twitter, I had around 7,000 followers, a few thousand on LinkedIn, you know, a few thousand on Facebook. And sooner or later, that just got the attention of a lot. And a lot of the content that I was posting, because for one, I'm a big foodie, a big food lover. So, you know, I'm constantly sharing, you know, pictures and photos of my meals back then and where I was dining, recommending restaurants and whatnot. And eventually a lot of restaurants started taking notice. And so during that time, when I was still sort of like doing freelance web design and a little bit of like internet marketing here and there, because of my social media presence, a lot of I ended up having like 4 different businesses, one being a food truck, one being a tea house, one being a pizza shop, and another restaurant approached me and saying, hey, you've done such a great job on your social media. How do we do this for ourselves? Because at that time, you know, we're talking about 2010, 2009, it was still like quite foreign for a lot of businesses. You know, they, So I think I was kind of at the right place at the right time, so to speak. And that's kind of where with four food and beverage clients, I just noticed that, hey, you know, I might be onto something here. There might actually be a demand for this particular service. And that's kind of the genesis, if you will, of Popcorn and kind of how I got started in 2011.
Awesome. Yeah. And so do you guys specialize in serving a specific niche, or are you pretty broad in the types of clientele that you serve?
Yeah, I mean, we've been around for going on now 12 years. I would say our first 4 years or so, we were very heavy in that food and beverage and hospitality space. Mm-hmm. And then after that first 3 or 4 years, we kind of realized that, you know, I came to the realization that, you know, a great restaurant is not one that necessarily is great because of their social media presence. A great restaurant is great because of their food and service, right? So mm-hmm. Social media is great in those cases where you're promoting places that are already good, and you can make the argument that great restaurants don't even need marketing because, you know, there's so much word of mouth. And there's probably a lot of examples that you probably know of great restaurants that don't do any marketing and are still perhaps slammed every night, right? So yeah, what I ended up seeing is that we ended up taking on a few restaurants that weren't great. And then so, social media, they were kind of hoping that it would be the silver bullet for them, that, hey, let's just talk about ourselves more. Let's get more people in here, not realizing that, you know, if they don't kind of fix their food and service, that, you know, it's going to be a lost cause anyway, right? So yeah. I think eventually, after working with a few restaurants, we started thinking a little bit bigger in terms of, well, what other types of businesses are out there? And those included things like hotel chains or wineries or tourism-based businesses or other hospitality type of businesses. And slowly but surely, we kind of grew out our portfolio there by working with those types of businesses. And I guess over the years, our clientele has shifted a little bit, where I would say today, like, only about maybe 10% of our clients are in the food and beverage space. And we're talking about usually working with like multi-location franchises or larger food and beverage establishments. The rest of our clients are more geared towards like consumer packaged goods, specifically like food manufacturers or food brands, and also technology companies. So we definitely expanded our services beyond just social media. So a lot of what we do now is also around like Google advertising and SEM and Google AdWords. But we're also doing a lot in terms of like PR and influencer campaigns. And we're still developing websites here and there for where it makes sense. So we've kind of diversified not only our service offering, but also our clientele.
Interesting. Okay. And then, so I know you mentioned that you got your start with those restaurants who had come across your social media. They were really impressed with it, and that's how you got your foot in the door with the restaurant industry. Mm-hmm. How has your strategy for bringing leads in the door evolved over the years?
This has been something that I guess like lead generation for us, like, we've never been intentional with it. To be honest, I would say almost all of our business since day one has come through our door through finding us through either organic Google search or perhaps just finding me and just sort of knowing me as, a local influencer and business owner, right? So back in those days, I spent a lot of times in the early days networking. So going out to a lot of networking events, meeting other business owners and things like that, being part of a few different groups, like either entrepreneur or business groups. So mm-hmm. In a short but concentrated time period, I was able to make a lot of contacts. So but that was never ever like, hey, nice to meet you, do you need a website or do you need internet marketing? I approach networking very much in terms of just meeting people and just making genuine connections and not trying to sell them.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. And then, so we were actually talking before the show a little bit about, you know, how you're very well connected with other agencies in the area. Do you create, you know, like strategic partnerships with other agencies where you're able to, you know, refer like overflow work back and forth, that sort of thing?
Yeah, definitely. I think over the years, we've definitely established several partnerships with different agencies, whether they're branding agencies. Like, branding is not really something that we focus on. Or maybe even in the early days before we started focusing on paid ads, like, we would have referral partners in place where we would send that business. You know, for me, it's all about like, I'm always trying not to take on work that I know that we're not best suited for, because mm-hmm. that just kind of ends in disaster for both parties involved usually. Yeah. Right? So,
yeah.
And I think when it comes to agencies, yes, there are so many different agencies in Vancouver, but I also think that there are also so many opportunities as well, that everybody can kind of play within their sandbox, if you will. I find it great when we can actually collaborate with. There was one footwear company that we worked with. They came to us, they had just they had just kind of finished like a Kickstarter campaign, and they really wanted to grow into a bigger brand, just from crowdfunding. Like, being that they just had this successful crowdfunding campaign, now they're like, okay, well, how do we actually create some momentum and actually build up this brand and turn this into something, right? So we work collaboratively with a branding agency to really bring brand to life. But then once the brand was pretty much built, then we kind of took the reins in terms of like the marketing and the communications and like the campaign work. So yeah, that part worked really well. And sometimes in those cases, you also create efficiencies for the client, right? Because it's not necessarily that they have to do onboarding twice, maybe once with the branding agency and once with the marketing agency. Like, we're in those discussions like from like the get-go, from day one, so that we're able to kind of move through the project efficiently that way.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's so smart and makes a lot of sense. Digital marketing has become so broad in the number of services that fall into the digital marketing category. So I think it's becoming increasingly difficult to really be a master at every single one of those services. It just makes so much sense to partner up.
Going back to your original question, though, of like kind of how leads find us, I think one of the goals that we have for this year is really being more intentional with our leads, because, you know, we've been very fortunate to have like, you know, Fortune 500 brands just come through the door and find us. That being said, that doesn't happen like, let's say, every week or every day or even, you know, every year, I would say. So, you know, I think one of the goals for this year is really to be more intentional with our lead generation, and what that's going to entail is, things from like running paid ads for ourselves, creating landing pages, creating white papers, downloadable resources, things that will add value for our potential customers. And so, yeah, that's something that we want to do to create a little bit more predictability in our revenue stream.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I love that. Awesome. So I know you guys are very referral driven. What would you say is the key to maintaining happy clients who are hopefully going to bring in those referrals for you?
Yeah, I think it's about happy clients, I think, really comes down to properly managing expectations. And I think anytime that I'm not gonna say that there haven't been unhappy clients over the decade that we've been in business. I would say that's a very small percentage, but I would say anytime that that has happened, it's always been because of misaligned expectations, right? And so, and what that means is, we're a service provider, and on the other side we have a paying customer, right? So sometimes we have clients that come through the door with unrealistic expectations, and it's like, hey, we want you to turn us from zero to $2 million business in 1 year, right? Like, how much will that cost? How long will it take? Or is this doable, right? So really, I think what I've learned over the years is to have those conversations, to explore with people, where are these expectations rooted in, like how, and sort of like bring them back down to earth, right? Not saying that you can't go from zero to $2 million, but I think a lot of people, a lot of, especially I would say like smaller business owners, just generally kind of don't know what that entails and what that would actually look like in terms of the pieces and the building blocks that need to go or that need to be put in place in order for that to happen, right? So
yeah,
it's really kind of breaking it down into like, you know, we need to kind of focus on, if you're new, maybe it's brand building marketing activities, and if you're a little bit more established, maybe you already have your brand, maybe it's more sales driven or community driven activities, right? So it's really about like managing expectations is really about just being on the same page. And, you know, when we finally get sign off that we agree to work with each other, not only are we clear on kind of what we're delivering, but they're also clear on not only what we're delivering, but what to expect from that. Right. So,
yeah, I think that's so important.
Yeah, for sure. So I think for sure it's about, properly setting expectations and also checking back regularly, right? Because sometimes, you know, with marketing, especially like with executing a marketing strategy, sometimes they don't always go according to plan, right? And sometimes those plans and strategies need to shift. Maybe after a couple months, you notice something's not working, it needs to be adapted. So, you know, how does that actually impact the end goal, right? Does that impact the goal? Does that change the end goal? Maybe, or vice versa, maybe things are going way better than expected, right? Do we need to adjust that $2 million goal, which maybe was seemed unattainable at first, but now is suddenly within reach, right? Maybe now it's a $3 million goal. So I think it's just regularly checking in so that providing clients with that transparency as things are happening and really becoming more of seen as like kind of like a true partner, a marketing partner, rather than just like sort of a service provider or a vendor, so to speak. So that's really like the best clients that we have are ones that we really have a true partnership with, in that you know, we can have those honest and candid and transparent conversations with them, and even when things are going sideways, it's okay. It's like it's not the end of the world, right? There's ways back from that. So I think it comes down to having that partnership and that relationship with the clients.
Yeah, I love that. I think those are really, I think that's wise words. And yeah, it's so important to just manage those expectations and continually make sure that they're staying managed. And then, like you mentioned as well, ensuring you're staying transparent, you know, when things aren't necessarily going the way you want, you know, you're just being honest with your clients and then developing a really strong relationship as a result. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, where do you see Popcorn in 5 years' time?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think the general answer was just continuing to do kick-ass work for kick-ass clients with a kick-ass team, right? you know, what we're going to be doing specifically with regards to like the social media channels and whatnot, that all remains to be seen. I think a lot of what we're seeing these days, like kind of making headlines and really being talked about, is AR and AI. So
yes, like crazy.
These are a couple things that we're now sort of dipping our toe into and starting to do a little bit more work in that space. So I think that's just within digital marketing, there's never going to be a, well, this is it. Like, it's not like stone carving, for example, where, you know, I think that's the exciting part, is that digital marketing, who knows where it's going to be in 5 years. But yeah, I just want to continue to build upon what we have done over the past decade and continue improving and building from there.
Awesome. I love it. Very exciting to look forward to where you'll be in 5 years.
Thanks.
So now we're going to move on to the fast five. So I have five rapid fire questions for you now. Are you ready?
Sure. Yep.
Okay. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
I think The 4-Hour Workweek is a really good book that I would recommend. Not because I want a 4-hour workweek necessarily, but I think like the principles of that book really kind of teach you to focus on the areas of your business where you're going to make the most impact, and kind of let go of the rest, right? Like build a team around a supporting cast, if you will, for the other elements of the business, right? So I think very early on, as a small business owner, and I'm sure a lot of small business owners can relate, they try to do too much on their own, right? Whether that's like, I don't know, cleaning the dishes in the staff room, to doing bookkeeping when, you know, they can't, when, you know, accounting is not their forte, or whatever it might be, that they end up, you know, not putting into their business and using their time productively in a way that really drives their business forward, right? So most business owners have that kind of one, I would say, like that one core thing that really makes them unique and really will really drives their business forward, right? For me, that is, you know, like marketing strategy, right? Like if I'm not spending time doing like marketing strategy, it'll have to be things like, you know, perhaps working on things that will improve team culture or really like things that will have a measurable and like measurable impact on not only the work that we do, but, you know, the culture within our team. So yeah, I would say 4-hour work week is kind of one that's kind of left a lasting impression on me. I don't think I would ever want to get to a 4-hour work week because I'd probably be bored out of my mind for the rest of the 36 hours, I guess. But yeah.
Awesome. Great recommendation. And what does your morning routine look like?
Yeah, so these days I have two young kids, ages 3 and 7. So my morning routine really is about getting up and getting them out the door, you know, packing their lunch and getting them breakfast. And most of the time it means that I'm not having breakfast myself. I usually I do the morning drop off. So usually my work day starts right after the school drop off. It's nothing too exciting. I would say on days where I have a little bit more time, I like to start my day, and I guess on weekends, I like to start my day, you know, like looking through like news articles and social media and just kind of catching up on some email newsletters and doing some more of that kind of finding out kind of what's happening in the industry and what's relevant and stuff like that. But I don't always have that luxury.
Very good. And yes, it can definitely be challenging when you have young kids. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
I've for a long time, I guess maybe for the last 10 years, I've really kind of followed Elon Musk, and I've really admired kind of his the way that he approaches innovation. And he's just such a disruptor when it comes to like technology and just sort of looking at alternative ways of solving problems really at a really large scale. So that being said, I think, you know, he's kind of made the headlines over the last year or so, probably for the wrong reasons. And like kind of, so I would say like, you know, like some, you hear about kind of how he views like workplace culture. And that's kind of something that I was like, I don't know if I really agree with the way he's running businesses. And but I would say like, he's definitely somebody that I've been paying attention to for a while now.
Very good. And this is a tricky one, but what's your favorite online tool?
My favorite online tool has to be Slack. I think, you know, I think all of us, we probably get more emails than we would like, but I think Slack really was a game changer for me in a lot of ways in terms of work emails anyway, especially internally within the team. It just allowed me to, cut down 100 emails down to 10 emails. So with just one simple communications tool.
Perfect. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
One thing that I wish I had known or wish I had done actually is seek out a mentor back in those early days.
Good one. Yep.
I always think that, and these days I'm a mentor to a few people as well, like whether they're entrepreneurs or business people. I feel like at any stage of your professional career, you should either be a mentor yourself or should seek out a mentor and be a mentee. I think a lot of the early missteps that I had early on in business could have been avoided had I, had a mentor perhaps to kind of run things through, and maybe somebody who's been doing it a little bit longer or better than I have for, and just has more experience or, So things like, I'll give you an example, is just like having very detailed contracts, right? Like I've had in the early days, they didn't really teach me in school like how to draft up a contract, and so my contracts back in the day were quite ambiguous and open to interpretation, right? And so you never want to leave that much subjectivity in contracts, right? So I had one example of like a website that I had I was building for a small business owner, which in my head was like a 4-page website, but in their head it was more like a 40-page website. And so again, kind of going back to what I was saying earlier about managing expectations, the expectations weren't properly managed there, right? And so had I just said this is a 4-page website, I would have saved myself a lot of grief. In the end, I ended up delivering a 40-page website, but that was kind of a painful lesson learned.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, taking advantage of having a mentor is such an amazing opportunity. And, you know, why not borrow on someone else's experiences, and it'll just fast track your learning. So I think that's a really, really great suggestion.
Great.
Awesome. Well, Dennis, thank you so much for joining me for today's episode. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show, and I've really enjoyed learning about your story of starting Popcorn. So thank you again for being today's guest.
Thanks, Julia. It was a pleasure meeting you. And I can't wait to hear this on your podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.